Welcome back to Latitude with 43 North. I am Justine Pelkowski, the Senior Marketing Manager.
And I'm Cindy Sedaris, the Senior Platform Manager.
And today we are welcomed by Helen Min, the co-founder and managing partner of Phenomenal Ventures. Welcome, Helen.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. As we kind of kick things off, how about you tell us a bit just about who you are and how you got to this point?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I feel like it's appropriate to mention that I'm a Buffalo native. So it's really wonderful to be here today. So thank you very much for hosting me. I've had so much fun. So currently I am a managing partner at Phenomenal Ventures. And we launched our debut fund last year. We invest across enterprise software, fintech, and commerce at early stages. So anything pre-series A. And we've made 18 investments so far from the portfolio. And we invest in the US across those sectors. We're otherwise geographic agnostic. And really, we pick those sectors because they mirror the operating experience my partner Mina and I have had in Silicon Valley. So we met in 2008 at Facebook and then have gone on to work for companies like Dropbox and Uber and Plaid and Slack. And so, a lot of those companies, they fit sort of neatly in those three buckets that I mentioned. Prior to that, I was working in advertising in Chicago and in San Francisco. And I think that's about it.
That's a pretty hefty background with a lot of really great experience. So can you just bridge the gap for us and tell us how you went from advertising in Chicago to working for companies like Facebook to venture capital? What caused you and Mina to decide to open up a venture fund?
Yeah, of course. So I think I do get that question a lot. Like, how did you know you wanted a career in tech? And to be totally honest, I didn't. I thought that I would work in advertising forever. But I think, like a lot of people, 2008, really, if you were in the workforce, then, it had other plans for you. And so I was working at an advertising agency on the Audi of America account. And so I was sort of splitting time between San Francisco and the Detroit area. 2008 was significant for many reasons, but it was about a year after the iPhone had come out. And so you started to see, if you worked in advertising, where the eyeballs were going. And so there was really, that sort of moment in time where, it was shifting away from television and onto digital. So that was both a desktop and then mobile, and the iPhone having the internet in your pocket. It really started to make marketers think differently about reaching consumers. And so, when you think about, am I at this point in time? And my dad's a former history professor. I feel like, I kind of nerd out on zooming out and where am I in this point in history? If you're working in advertising, I think like you really felt like, oh, there's a shift happening and I'm living through it and I have a front row seat. And so I got a call from Facebook in June of 2008 and they had just started to get into the brand advertising business and they started to hire some folks who had experience in traditional brand advertising. And so I was one of them. And so I joined shortly thereafter to basically help develop brand advertising products and sell back to my former self, in the advertising industry. And so having Facebook be the first startup that you work for, you sort of hit the jackpot in many ways. And I think there were about 600 employees when I started and I was there for 5.5 years and the company grew to a much larger size. They, of course, went public and sort of that, led to many other opportunities afterwards. So after about 15 years as an operator in tech, I was angel investing for a while. I think starting around 2016, I decided it was a good time to start a fund.
Wonderful. And, we keep hearing like this time for fundraising is a bit scary for founders, given that you're kind of on that other side now as a fund manager and investing in founders. Do you have some specific pieces of advice for founders who are raising now or will be raising soon to kind of make it through the times we're in?
Yeah, of course. I think one, since I already brought up 2008 and sharing my personal journey, I will say that there are a lot of parallels between 2008 and I'd say like 2022, sort of the freeze and not knowing the uncertainty of how long you're going to be in this period. I'm not an economist and I have no ability to predict the future, but I do think that, we're in the worst of it right now. And so if it's been a long road for fundraising, right, if it's been really, especially hard, it's always hard, but especially hard in the last year or so to raise money, get the attention of investors, or, even just figure out your acquisition strategy, things like that. I do think that if you stick with it, there are better times ahead and in the not too distant future. So I would just encourage everyone to sort of hold out a little bit longer. And you know, I think that they say that they always say it's never a better time just to start to be a founder, or it's never a better time to do X, Y, and Z. But really, like, you know, the market that goes in cycles. And if you are a believer that we are, you know, in a low point in the cycle, then it is actually a really excellent time to, you know, start a company and take money and sort of be there and set up all of your infrastructure so that when we do swing back into like a higher growth period, that you're there to sort of capture that upside. So I'm very optimistic about where we're at in the cycle.
That's good. That's really hopeful news. And I know a lot of founders in the space, the AI is a hot topic, of course, in venture. So for those founders who are trying to get the attention of those investors, and maybe they are not in the AI sector, what advice do you have for them? How do they get the attention of investors who are specifically seeking out AI?
I think that, you know, when you hear about valuations being down or there being just a decline in deal-making activity generally in VC, they always caveat that by saying, with the exception of AI, right? So that's to say that there's still tons of activity and lots of money being flowed into AI companies. So that makes a lot of builders who are, you know, who've been working on something for a while who are not in AI wonder, should I pivot into the AI space? Should I buy the domain for my company .ai to just get the attention? And, you know, I think that it's really like, that's a short-term way of looking at it. I think AI is a little bit different than crypto or, you know, anything else that we've seen that was sort of like had a really clear sort of hot phase and then fizzled out quickly, in that AI is more similar to mobile in that like it'll just be sort of part of our conversation kind of going forward and it won't fizzle out in the same way. But that said, like, you know, if you pivot to AI or that's not a passion of yours or a core competency or anything, you know, you're eventually going to have to figure out how to maintain that. And then maybe that's not what you signed up for initially when you started that company. So, you know, I think it's kind of a short-term way to look at it. That said, you know, the most important job of a founder, I think one of the most important jobs is to make sure that you can keep going. And so having capital and, you know, money in the bank to keep operations going and you know, survive another month to before you hit escape velocity. That is a really important part of a founder's job. And so on the other hand, you know, you got to do what you got to do, whatever, to make sure that you can keep the lights on. And if that's figuring out how to incorporate AI into your business, then maybe that is a path. I don't think that's the only path though.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Something you mentioned earlier to our founders in made me think of that, like playing to their strengths. Could you speak a little bit more to that again and just how maybe if there's two co-founders who one is good at storytelling, one's good at fundraising, one's an introvert, one's an extrovert, how you manage that balance?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally, you know, we think of Phenomenal Ventures as a startup, right? We have Mina and I, we're just two people. And we have to play to our strengths. And luckily, we have complementary skill sets. And that's because that's just efficient. It means that we can cover a lot of bases with few people. And I think that a lot of startups take that approach similarly when they're creating their founding teams, right? They're looking for people who have complementary experiences and skill sets. And that if everybody focuses on their strengths, then you have a complete company. and so I think that that's important from just like a business efficiency standpoint. But I also think it's really important, you know, the idea of playing to your strengths, so that you have the stamina to go for a really long time. If you're doing something you hate, it's going to be painful and exhausting in a way that is, you know, not the case when you're doing something you love every day. And so playing to your strengths also means, you know, how am I showing up and, you know, doing the work that I feel like I was meant to do on a day-to-day basis and minimizing, frankly, the work that I don't excel at. And so I think the question you asked, referencing back to the founder chat, was around storytelling. And, you know, among the founding team, and I'll say this as an investor, like we always meet the entire founding team at some point in the investment process. But typically there is one person that is our point of contact and they're leading the fundraising efforts. And that person can be any role, but they're typically the best, you know, storyteller and person who's going to be, you know, sort of like doing the end-to-end part of the fundraising process. And so I think that's just another thing to think about. Like there's energy exhausted by the founders. And for some founders, it's going to be a lot more energy than other founders. So you just want to make sure that you're preserving that very precious energy on, you know, building and not just fundraising if that's not something that you enjoy.
Yeah. So you have a very unique perspective. Now you're an investor. You came from the marketing and the advertising industry. So you get to see both sides of that story that's being told. So from your perspective, from an investor perspective, how important is it for those founders to have their story nailed down and their brand? And, you know, there's got to be somebody on their team that's good at that. So how does that affect you in your decision-making from an investor standpoint?
Great question. I will answer that in two ways. So one, I think a lot of the companies that I mentioned that Mina and I have worked for, the thing that they all have in common, because they're across different sectors and we joined at different phases of the company, they all had technical founders that didn't place a super high value on marketing or branding. And I think that in the Valley, there's a little bit of a culture of like, we have the best engineers, and if you build the best product, everyone will come, right? And for some of them, you can't blame them because that is what happened. But I think for the most of us out there, like the rest of the country, that's not the case, right? You can't build quietly and have magically investors showing up at your door with a term sheet. And so that's just the first caveat. And then I'll answer the question by saying, you know, everyone has a great story. Every company has a great story. It's, I think, where people often conflate great storytelling and great presenting of the story, like they're not the same thing. And so it's really figuring out what is the story, and like introverts, shy people who don't really, you know, think that they're great storytellers, like everybody can create that great story, because most likely it's the authentic story of why you're doing what you're doing. What made you drop everything else? What made you say no to every other opportunity to say that, like, this is the most important thing I can be doing with my life? And then how you deliver that story is totally different. Sometimes, you know, for really shy, I'm using the word shy, but what I mean by like that is people who aren't natural born, you know, on stage presenters, the best way to tell the company story is actually through the voice of the customer. And so what's a really great way to package up customer feedback or have your customers, you know, record a video or have quotes or just really tell the company story through the voice of a customer. That's one way to sort of, you know, like get around that. Like I personally don't want to be the vehicle in which I tell the story, but there is a great story there. So there's many ways. I think there are many, many ways to reach the objective of telling a great story, even if you're not the person delivering it.
Awesome. You know, something we try to do here at 43 North is tell the story of our founders in Buffalo as well. Just kind of going back to the Buffalo piece of you being originally from Buffalo, know that you left a bit ago. Mm-hmm. But I guess, what's your perception of Buffalo? Like, what do you think of Buffalo being back and what's happening with the ecosystem here?
Oh, wow.
Because there wasn't much of a startup economy when you were here.
No.
And now there is.
Well, you know, a couple of things about Buffalo that I think are super special, and I think it's still the case. Like there's such a brain trust here. I mean, there's so many great universities and, you know, like Roswell, it's still like a very well-known research center throughout the world. And, you know, I just think that like, I think of the kids that I grew up with and going to school, like it's just an incredible place. I think UB's computer science program continues to get better and better every year and gain recognition. So I think everything is there. And so, you know, it's really exciting to see this world that I've been a part of also like have a presence or just have its own ecosystem that's building. So I love what 43 North is doing. And I hope that Buffalo, you know, becomes a place, kind of like some other cities that I think have recently done this well, like Pittsburgh. I think the Detroit area, but the things that all those places have in common is that like the university system, the infrastructure of having like, you know, smart people want to live there and like raise their families. Like, mm-hmm. I think everything is here. I think there are probably some jokes about the cold weather that I'm probably missing, but it's really not that bad. It's snowy today. And I'm like super happy to be here. let's see, I think other things that my mom, she actually started her career in this building that we're at right now when it was Marine Midland Bank. And then she worked at Ingram Micro, which is also in the area. And so I think to me, Buffalo is synonymous with like her career, which has always been on the tech side. She worked for the office of the CIO. And so I know that there are people who are, you know, very capable of building great software products and scaling them here. So I just, I want to see all the dots connected, and I want to see this city thrive and get on the map as a great place to like start a company.
And what an evolution for you to see your mom work in this building when it was originally developed as a bank, and then it kind of lost its life, and now it's being breathed a new life. That's all tech and startups, and you really get to be a part of that now too.
I love that. I was sending her photos of the elevator. Like, I was like, does this look familiar? and the views definitely looked familiar. She used to bring me into the office. And I remember that. Super cool. I mean, I think like maybe 10 or 15 years ago, Yahoo was thinking about like putting call centers here. I think, you know, one of the things that I'm still waiting, and my childhood friends who are still, you know, part of the community here, doing their part to sort of, you know, make this a really great livable place for young people, is having like jobs, right? And job creation, and having this be a place where companies want to have their employees work. So I'm hoping that as somebody who loves architecture and American architecture, like Buffalo's downtown is really like, it's truly special. And so I hope that in my lifetime, I'm able to see it be bustling and exciting the way that I remember it as a child, when you get off at that last, you know, metro stop and open up into the Main Place Mall, which I don't even know if exists anymore, but
it would be so
special. And so, you know, being in this tower is super special. I think that this is a very good start to that. So excited to follow the journey here.
Yeah, that's great. And you have all of those memories when you were young. So that's one thing that we sell our founders on too, when they're moving to Buffalo, is this is a good place to raise your family. And I did the boomerang thing and I left and I came back. And the reason that I came back is because it was to raise my family. I got pregnant with my daughter and she was 3 months old, and we moved back knowing that this was the place that we wanted to raise her. So I know you mentioned that you have children as well. And we have a lot of female, we have 26% of our portfolio was female founders, and a lot of them are moms. So I would just love to hear your experience being an entrepreneur and a mom. Do you bring your kids into the entrepreneurial world, or do you really keep the two separate? How do you maintain your relationship with your kids and your relationship at work with Mina and the rest of the fund?
Yeah, great question. I think the best thing, I think being an entrepreneur or, you know, having your own fund or whatever is fantastic for moms, because you get to do everything on your own time. And if you're a mom, you know that you know how to make your schedule work, right? You will find extra hours in the day to get everything done. And so I think the best part about it is like, great, maybe the kids go to sleep and then you knock out like 6 hours of your most productive, time in the day. And so I would encourage, as somebody who has taken maternity leave at a large company that had a really generous policy and had to go back to work and absolutely not be on my time, right? And then contrasting that to now. So I have an almost 8-year-old son and I have a 3-month-old daughter. So very big difference in sort of the lifestyle, and also post-COVID having a baby. Things are very different. You know, I'll say that just being able to manage your time. I mean, I'm plenty busy and you know, I'm definitely working full time, but I get to do it around my schedule and what works for my family. So I think of that as very empowering, and I hope that more women do that.
It is. Thanks for sharing that. I think so many people get caught into this mindset that they have to work for this company that has the maternity leave policy and all of their ducks have to be lined up, because when you have kids, you lose a lot of control. You don't know what's going to happen, and we want to control the things that we can, but sometimes that's not always the best, because maybe your schedule is not in your control, and as an entrepreneur, it can be. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. And the other thing I'll say is like a barrier. Some of these barriers are ones that we create for ourselves. And I think being an entrepreneur is risky for everybody. But I think, you know, as women, we tend to take on a lot of the pressure of like, okay, well, I have this role and this will fall apart without me. And taking that step, I think, you know, it's worth acknowledging at least that I think that the way that parents, you know, carry the load is different. And I think if you flip that on its head and look at all of the opportunities and the ways that you can actually serve your family, you know, by taking that risk, like it's just sort of like a different mindset.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. Yeah. And even some of our current cohort members, their families are here. They bring their kids here. The kids are in the office. So it's really nice to see people be able to make that work.
Super cool.
So Helen, as we're wrapping up here, where can our listeners find you? Whether social media, website?
Yeah, well, I am one of those people that is trying to transition off of Twitter and onto Threads because I'm a Facebooker and bleed blue forever. But, you know, that's a slow progression and as somebody, I'm pretty addicted to Twitter. So I'm on Twitter. You can find me at Helen_Min. And I tweet sometimes, but I'm on it all the time. So that's the best place to find me. Slide into my DMs. Otherwise, yeah, hopefully, you know, you hear, start hearing more about our portfolio companies and what we have next.
Can't wait to keep track of what's going on. And thank you again for braving the snowy Buffalo weather flying in from the West
Coast. So happy to be. I think of it as like, I'm only here for, you know, like 36 hours and how lucky it was to see snow during that time. So
yeah. Love that attitude. Yes, that's great.
Exactly. Cause I get to then fly right back to San Francisco.
You get
right?
to leave.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. We hope to see you in Buffalo again soon.
Yes.
Thank you.